This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's After Show. Lots to talk about today, as usual. I thought we'd start the show. However, though, Raph apparently has a story to tell about Train Aid.
Oh, yeah. So people may have heard... what was his name again? The fight dietitian?
Jordan Sullivan.
Yeah.
Jordy.
So, we had him on. We talked a lot about hydration in it. Listeners may know I often suffer from cramps. General dehydration issues.
Yeah.
Has dogged me for years.
Yeah. And we've kept in touch with him since. I've referred him to a few people. So, yeah. Good guy.
Really good guy. And he helped me out with the hydration strategy. So, I used his product. What happened was I'm training for this 30-kilometer run with a 30-pound weight vest.
For your 30th birthday?
Yeah, for my 30th birthday.
When is it? You got till...
I'll probably do it like in April.
Okay.
Birthday's in April in the middle. I don't think it's not going to be on the day because it's like a work day and it takes hours.
Yeah, yeah. It cripples you immensely.
Exactly. So we'll see how it goes. So anyway, I did 15 kilometers moderate heat first time, and then second time, it was just over 20 kilometers. So an extra lap basically of the park. And it was hot. I kind of messed up the timing here. It was 27 degrees for it.
What time of day was it?
This second time was like 4 o'clock. So it was like 4
p.m.
So it was like 4 till 7. So by the end, it was cool.
Yeah. You also can't go peak of the day when it's so crowded as well. Kind of need to do off-peak times.
I'm going pretty slow.
Oh, okay.
Not too bad, to be honest. It's not a big worry running on top of people. I got this vest on.
Yeah, yeah.
People should be running past me. So... anyway, first time I did it, I took no hydration. Had like a bottle of water before. I had one bottle, which was like so unprepared. I had energy gels. So I had that one bottle like halfway through, shared it with the guy I was running with.
Oh, no.
And anyway, I completed it okay. I was like absolutely broken by the end of it. And I could barely do anything the rest of the day functioning. And I had like a 5% whoop score the next day. So it took a serious toll on me.
What were you that day? Do you remember? Were you green?
That day? Yeah, I think both times I've gone into it green.
Okay.
Because, the day before I kind of rested and stuff. Yeah. Both times I've been red the next day. This time I did the 20K. So it was interesting. So this time I followed his protocol, hydrated normally before it. And then I had a scoop, like a bottle with 200 mils of water and a scoop of Train Aid every single lap. So basically half hour.
200 mils. Like so that's like a glass, right?
Yeah, like a full glass of water with the scoop, which like at 27 degrees... was going down so easy.
Yeah.
And I did three energy gels, which was the same as last time on that kind of the other end.
Did he
of the
say to do the energy gels as well or didn't say?
No, I didn't talk to him about the energy gels. That was just like my own research on that. I think in the end I may have needed a bit less because his drink actually has quite a lot of glucose, but I also just like the energy gels. Like something to look forward to. So honestly, it's something I like. Oh my God, it's like a lolly.
What? Do you know what your pace was? How fast you ran?
Yeah, so I ran... I think 7:15, 7:20 kilometers for it.
So you're plotting, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Plotting.
Are you going running shoes or are you going flat shoes?
No, running shoes.
Okay.
My feet would be broken.
Oh, really? Yeah. Because of the extra shoes. Weight, right?
Extra weight and kind of like sticks and stones a little bit and like just a long time.
Yeah.
Anyway, on your feet. So it was interesting. So I would say for the first hour and a half, I think if anything, all the hydration slowed me down because I had to like go to my car, get the bottle, drink it and kind of walk while I'm drinking it. But then where... I noticed this insane difference was like, I would say probably when I hit the 2 hour mark. So when I got to like 2 hours last time, like I said, like I was so done. And this time my fastest lap by far was the 2 to 2.5 hour lap, the last lap.
Oh, okay.
Last lap was like 6:40.
Okay.
And I honestly was like, felt incredible. I almost was like euphoric.
Oh, really?
Going into this last lap. It wasn't all the hydration. I just was feeling so much better. But what was interesting was I think that being really well hydrated for stuff, in the first 2 hours, like, doesn't make that much difference to your actual time. You can kind of tough through it if you don't. Where it makes a huge difference is, like, A, when you get beyond that, and then B is in your recovery. So, after this, I was tired. I was kind of cramping, but I was, like, fine. And I was, like, walking around, like, went to dinner, like, totally sweet. Woke up in red the next day, but all right. Whereas the last time when I did it, like, I was, like, lying on the ground. And I was, just, like, having waters and hydrating glass water and stuff like that. So, I think that... what I'll take away from the experience, A, I'm going to be so well equipped. I'm probably going to use a similar hydration strategy for my next trial run and for when I actually do it. But B, what I realize, I really think for hydration, it's much more about, yeah, you're going really long, it makes a huge difference, but it's really around the recovery from the training. When you finish it dehydrated, you finish it just broken, like mentally and physically broken. But when you nail your hydration from it, like you're good to go. Hours later.
Yeah. So, question: were you stopping at the end of a lap and then doing it, filling it up, shaking it,
or that was
were
they already? Already.
So, how many?
I always
get. You have little bottles?
Yes, I had like.
How many?
It was two of us. We had eight.
Wow.
Yeah, eight bottles ready. Yeah. and 6 energy gels. So okay. it was kind of also mentally good because every time I got back to lap, I knew I was going to walk for like 100 meters or whatever it was while I drank it.
Yeah.
Drop the bottle in a different place in the park, keep running.
Yeah, cool. Just tossing your rubbish everywhere.
No, I had it in a nice... No, there were shaker bottles. So I kept them in my thing. And I was like nervous someone was going to steal them. So I kept them locked in my car. So I'd have to open up the car to get them.
So was there a preloading strategy that he gave you as well? Was he like, okay, you're going to drink this much an hour out before you even start
the run? Yeah, there was one of them.
Oh, just one. So he didn't make you drink like 2 liters.
No. So I'm going to hit him up though, because I think if I do this next one and it's warm again and I'm getting towards like 4 hours, I think there's maybe something I've got to do during it. But both times I was well hydrated into it. You just get dehydrated very quickly.
You do, fucking oath. Yeah, because you sweat like a
think
beast.
Think about it, right? I had 8 of these bottles. I still finished it like I'm desperate to drink.
Yeah.
Like I'm parched.
Would you get more beyond that or said no?
What do you mean?
So like... Just say you had the 200 mils with a scoop and then you're like, oh, I could do with more water. Do you say no to that? You had to stick to the 200
mils. That's what I stuck to. Okay. Yeah. And I had nothing else organized and all the taps in the park are turned off because of COVID. So annoying. You can't even stop for a drink.
Oh, I didn't know they were turned off.
Yeah, it's like no bubbler. So you can't just go and get a drink.
Yeah.
So like you can't even drink if you want to.
Yeah.
I will speak to him about it next time. I reckon maybe for the next time, maybe need like something more or maybe it's just more of the same. See what he says. Maybe I'm not going to get that much benefit out of it. But man, yeah. I guess it's my first experience doing like longer endurance stuff and like just getting that shit down makes such a big difference.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, for me, I know obviously I've got the two goals right now, the strict bar muscle up and the marathon, kind of good because they don't conflict with each other. But yeah, I've never, I don't even think I've hit the half marathon mark yet. So I feel like that's going to be, I'm going to have to build up to something like that pretty soon. But my more recent challenge, I think there's always a... So, I'll give you some context as I transition into this. I think for the opening of Locker Room, when you take on... I can't remember the exact quote, but it resonated with me. It was something like, when you set really big goals, you have to become the person that achieves those sorts of goals. So, like, you have to build yourself personally. I'm butchering it, but it's like...
Fucking butchered that.
If you set a really big goal and you're not the person that can achieve those goals, you have to build yourself into the person that can achieve those sorts of goals.
Yeah.
And I feel like the goals that we're setting with Locker Room and the new venture, I don't feel like I'm quite at that level yet that I need to be. And that's just something that's been in the back of my mind. And I've been thinking to myself, what couple of things would take me to that next level? And I think everyone has some sort of that has any sort of personal development or self-awareness, has some aspect of that in their life. Like, man, if I just like change these couple of things... or I did a few more of these things more consistently, I would be at a higher level. And you either are the person that does those things or you're the person that just ignores them. And it's not to say that ignoring them, like you might ignore them and not want to do them because you just might not want to do them. You might not want to get to that level or you don't think it's worth it or you're happy with where you are and that's fine. And I've had that discussion with people as well. But I think that you can get trapped in this, like, I guess, coasting mode, right? And I see a lot of people that have achieved probably success beyond what they expected kind of get into this coasting mode. And anyway, so recently started listening to a bit more of the Real AF podcast with Andy Frisella, and he talked about how most successful businesses, and when he says successful, he means like that are profiting and doing quite well, they only ever achieve a modest amount of success. And he said the reason is because what drove you in the beginning and where we are now with Locker Room is like you had to make it work. You had to pay the bills. If you didn't, someone would close the doors. And then eventually you move out of that. I have to make this happen. There is no other choice or it's bankruptcy or it's over. You move from that phase into, okay, now I can pay myself. Now I'm profitable. Now I can pay the bills. Now you no longer have to do anything because everything is working. You don't have to take that meeting. You don't have to wake up early. You don't have to do that extra sales call or, you know, stretch yourself a little bit more or borrow that bit of extra money because everything's going well. And then everyone ends up sitting there. And then who goes beyond that are the people that continually paint themselves into a corner, keep backing themselves into a corner. They force themselves in that same situation. And one of the people involved in our life who's sort of a mentor to us, I remember him saying that same thing to me. He goes, I started becoming more successful, earning more money, started making millions of dollars, but I kept borrowing more money and I kept backing myself into a corner. I kept buying more properties, getting bigger leases, putting myself further and further into debt. So I had to work harder. So I had to keep growing the company and then sold it and paid all the debts off. And then immediately had this feeling of like, I don't have to do anything anymore. But without that, I owe someone money. You know, obviously he's buying assets or whatever, but you know, they're on mortgages. without that driving factor, without that millions and millions of dollars of debt, you know, looming in the background, you don't have to stick to that schedule. You don't have to work. There's not that drive, that fight in you, unless it's like something really deep internally that is probably you're going to have to undo on a couch later with a psychologist. But this next challenge is what I feel like I need to push myself to make sure. I feel like the next 3 or 4 months for us is very pivotal, right? And will determine the trajectory of sort of the next 12 to 24 months. And so I want to make sure that I'm at my best. Anyway, so Andy Frisella, he has this program called 75 Hard. It came up on an after show a few weeks ago, but I didn't really give it much attention. I knew about it, but I didn't really take it seriously at the time. But now I feel like the stars are kind of aligned. And obviously, as you'd like to...
Well, in truth, you said it would be easy.
That's true. I did say that. I didn't really give it much thought, I'll be honest. But as you guys know, I like to use the podcast as an accountability tool. And you can all use it as well as an accountability tool with your own Instagram and your own reach or whatever. It doesn't take many people. You can just tell your spouse. You can tell a couple people. It's useful. Same way I said, hey, I'm going to run a marathon this year. I'm going to get a strict bar muscle up by the end of this year. Starting from Monday, actually, it would have passed because we're recording this a week in advance. But starting on March 1st, I want to start the 75 Hard Challenge, okay, which comes up now. You can, I don't really know the, I know the rules that he's written up. However, I wanted to add a few more things to it. And the reason his few more things are not on there, and I do think he encourages people to add more stuff if you want to, is because they're very specific to our work. So it'd be like, you know, send 25 sales messages or whatever. So he's obviously not going to put that in his general program, but I'm going to follow the general program and then I'll add a few more things to myself on it. And he made it very clear that it's not a fitness program, even though there's fitness involved in it. It's a discipline program. You're pushing yourself, you're creating basically, if you were to do all these things in one day, that would be like your most elite optimal day. And he's like, cool, now you're going to, and that's the best version of yourself. Now do that for 75 days unbroken. So looking at it and thinking about it more, it is very difficult. So I'll go over it again. It's this one involved. So number one, you have to follow a diet. This can be a diet of your choice, but it must be a structured plan designed with physical improvement in mind. Now, I've been thinking about this a lot. For you and me, for example, we eat pretty well all the time. So
yeah, this is the one that is biggest hang up for me.
So I've thought about it a little bit more, and where I think I've landed with it is what falls down in my nutrition is that I end up missing meals. Mm. I don't necessarily like eat really bad foods, or I don't have to like change the type of foods I'm eating necessarily. It's just I'm inconsistent with hitting them. I miss meals because I get busy.
Are you going to lose weight for the to try and get your chin up, like sorry, your muscle up?
Yeah, so I think what will happen is...
How much do you weigh at the moment?
About 92, 93.
Do you reckon you can do the muscle up that way? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. But my both goals, marathon and the strict bar muscle up, lend itself better to being lighter, right?
For sure.
So I don't think I'd want to put on weight.
Definitely not.
No, I don't think I'd want to put on weight. But I'd be happy to maintain.
Yeah.
I don't need to lose. But so I think for me, it would be like, okay, these are the foods that I need to try and hit every day. And I don't want to miss a meal. Rather than overhaul all the foods I'm eating, I'm just like, hey, you eat this diet like 4 days out of the 7 of the week. Just make sure you don't miss it. And then obviously like the eating out and that sort of stuff, I just have to have because I don't actually think I'll be able to not eat out. So I think I'm just going to have rules about what I can eat when I eat out.
So 75 days is 2.5 months.
Yeah.
You can't not eat out for 2.5 months.
No, that's what I mean. So I have.
But you can choose the right foods when you go out.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'll still eat out. So it's like same way anyone could eat out, but they might be like, okay, cool. You can't have like these sorts of foods, for example.
So no, like you can't go for ice cream.
Yeah, and like hot chips or whatever stuff like that on the side, or burgers and stuff. So certain foods will get ruled out. So it's like, hey, I can't really eat there. Can we go somewhere like this? So that's what I think I'll do. So I'll kind of write that out. So the second thing, which is actually quite hard. We used to do this a lot, but I think it's still difficult. You must complete 2 45-minute workouts per day. And one of those workouts must be outdoors. That's obviously a little bit easier in Sydney. But I think with this one, I think the key is to make sure that the 45 minutes of training is not always like a savage, like 45-minute EMOM. There'll be obviously training sessions in there like that. But, you know, one 45-minute workout could be cool. I'm going to walk down to the park, take my shoes off and do like a bit of like flow and knee rehab stuff and that sort of thing. So not getting crazy with that because otherwise it's unsustainable. If you know you have to go out there and kill yourself in a savage workout, it's not going to work.
It's at least 90 minutes of training a day.
Yep. Cool. I think that would actually be a lot easier if one of them didn't have to be outdoors. Mm. Obviously, you just go like, back to back sort of thing. This one, a little bit easier for us. Absolutely no alcohol or cheat meals. I don't really drink that much anyway. So it would just be skipping a birthday or drinking at a birthday or something every now and then. The next one is
take. No cheat meals is like pretty tough.
Yeah. I honestly don't have many cheat meals anyway. Yeah. Would you count a bowl of like, so I have like a muesli every day with milk. It's kind of like my treat. That's not really a cheat meal. Not
It's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
What are you talking about, dude?
Take a progress picture every day. That's so that would be.
You already do that.
Pretty straightforward. Relax, bro. And then drink 1 gallon of water. That one, I think, will be.
But how much is a gallon?
It's 3.8 liters. 3.78 liters, something like that. That's good, it's a lot of water, but it's a really good one. It's like one you want to do, right? Mm. And then the other one is read 10 pages of book. Audiobooks don't count.
Fuck. Always kick it with the audiobooks.
Yeah. And there's like one thing that I'm going to add in there that's work-related. That's like, if I do this thing every single day for 75 days, 100% the gyms will be further along than they are now. And I do it, but it's just a little bit more inconsistent. And I'll probably throw in like posting there as well. Like do one post on Instagram and LinkedIn per day as well. Which I've started doing as well already. So yeah, a lot of good stuff in there. Obviously, you want to like stack other things in there. One thing I want to be is like I'll wake up at this time every single day.
You're getting to a lot of things,
but it's too many.
Bro.
It's too many. But I also think trying to do this stuff anyway will I have to wake up at certain times. I have to structure days a certain way, so it'll get there. But anyway, so that's what I'm taking on for 75 days. So starts on March 1st, and anyone listening to this, obviously it's a little bit past March 1st, but maybe encourage you to join me on the journey if you guys want to do it. Just do it for yourself though. I mean, this is not a challenge to like beat other people.
How do you win? You go 77 days.
How you win is you complete it. No, so like I think that the idea behind this is that you do your optimal day 75 days in a row. And it's not to say that you need to like stick with it forever and that you change these habits forever, but it's to like, okay, if I was to be my best self for 75 days, which by the sounds of this is your fucking best self for sure. Because I don't think I would want to do this indefinitely. It doesn't sound fun, right? The point is you're kind of a bit...
I mean, you can't even travel. Like, what if you get a plane?
Yeah. No, you're kind of a bit miserable in this whole journey here. Like, that's part of it, though. It's like the discipline. And it's the suffering you're discipline.
I mean, it's not miserable, but there are probably some miserable parts to it.
That's what I mean. Yeah. There'll be like some days it's like, oh, it's 8 o'clock. I'm going to have to go outside right now and go for a run for 40 minutes. It's kind of annoying. And you wouldn't normally do that, but it's that forcing yourself, it's that discipline. And it's not to say that all of it sticks with you afterwards, but it's like, hey, if we put a string of this, it's 2.5 a long time, what in your life progresses really far because you did that? So that's why it's got me interested. And yeah, that's why I'm going to do it on March 1st. And it doesn't conflict, obviously makes no difference to my current goals. I was going to just build the running and the pull-up program into that. There'll just be a little bit more training, other training around that also. And it's just nice timing with the opening of Locker Room. I just want to be like really pushing myself there. And I feel like I said, the next 3 to 4 months is going to really determine the trajectory of the next 12 to 24 months. So I'd love to invite you to do it with me, Raf. Consider it. You've got two days to consider it, bro.
This is the only thing I'm hung up on.
You've got a kid, so that's why I thought it's a little bit hard. Well,
you know, it's actually funny you mentioned this. So I'd seen this before, but I didn't realize it was the same thing as the person that asked the listener question. Old person we used to train with, Justine Beath.
Yeah.
She did it. And I saw it because she had a kid just around the same time I had one. Bro, she did it like with the baby being like 4 or 5 months old. And it's much more difficult being the mum, right?
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if she's breastfeeding or whatever. That is like, I thought that was actually, now I'm looking at it now, it's actually extraordinary.
Yeah.
So if she can do it, I could probably do it. I'm just trying to hang up on the diet one. That's like the only thing that's got me. I just don't know what I would do for the diet. So maybe I'll have a think about that.
Yeah, because like you don't really want to change anything right now.
Oh, it's not that I don't want to change it. I just don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
Like I don't really want to do like a low carb diet or something.
No.
But that to me is the hardest one.
I would just say like what's your optimal day of eating?
Yeah.
That's how I'm thinking about it. It's like all my supplements, like no more than this much caffeine. These foods that I definitely get in, this much protein, and then I'm like done for the day. Yep. And then it's minus no snacks or cheat meal sort of thing. And it's like, just repeat that day.
Because I reckon if I was to say what's the hardest thing, I think the fitting in the time of like the second workout is a big one.
Yeah.
That's a huge one. And then the other ones aren't like too bad. It's the discipline of doing it. But then the diet one. Because for me, like, say on the weekend, being able to like eat some food that's not part of my regular diet is like, I guess, enjoyable.
Yeah.
So that would be a discipline of having to not do that for 2.5 months.
Yeah.
So that would be the hardest bit.
Yeah. Well, you've got 2 days to decide. So let me know if you want to join me.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty good little journey. Anyway, so part of obviously that, like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I started sort of like second week into my strict bar muscle up training. And you know, one thing that I've definitely noticed about training, because I've kind of set out 3 days where I'm doing this training for it. One thing that's been interesting, I think, about this training so far is that because I'm just sort of making the program up with a rough structure as I go, this is like a lot of gymnastic skills, is there is like no way to know if you're on the right path. Mm. You know what I mean? If you're making progress or not. Because, yeah, there are small things along the way, but if anyone's ever pursued like a gymnastic skill or goal, it's just like you never think you're even close. And then one day it's like, oh, I got it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you get a little bit closer every now and then, but yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, am I even going to make any progress here?
I remember when I did, I was doing Teleki Strength, so I was doing a lot of handstand training and I was like trying to get my handstand better. It was exactly that experience. It was like so many drills. I'm like, I think they're getting a tiny bit better. Almost no difference. And then after like 4 months, I was like, okay, it's so much better.
Mm.
You know, I'd gone from like 10 seconds to, I think my best was like nearly a minute, but I could consistently do 30 seconds,
mm.
which was like, you know, consistency with handstands, everything. And it was exactly that experience. I felt like it was no progress for 4 months. And then in a week, I felt like I had transformed.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting, I guess, psychological battle.
Not like, yeah, it's not like snatch, which just goes like a kilo at a time.
Yeah, or a squat or a deadlift.
Yeah. Stuff.
It's pretty linear in many ways. Or just really the training I've been doing recently. A lot of it's just like fun. It's like maintenance sort of stuff and throwing down in different classes and stuff. And it's not really structured. But now I'm like, okay, you need to make sure you're doing this training, because if you don't, like, you're not going to get to this goal. So like all of a sudden now I have to be a little bit more disciplined on making sure I'm consistently doing it. And obviously I've been spending more time. We've been spending more time at locker room this week. It's nothing I can do for rows, really. Or like...
No back training.
Yeah. So
only because the equipment hasn't arrived, not because we're not getting back equipment.
Yeah. But one thing I definitely am going to do a lot more of, and I think this is actually going to work really well for the 75 hard challenge, is have some core workouts in there, like 45 yeah. minutes of core stuff. Just because obviously for calisthenics and for gymnastics, core is like one of the most important muscle groups to get really strong at. And I think just, yeah, feeling tighter and stronger through a pull through your core is always going to help a muscle up, you know? It's just how that training is. It just always... can never really be strong enough through the core. And it's always the training, it's the body part that gets neglected the most.
Do you work on your dip a lot for the bar muscle up training, or are you just really focusing on your pull?
No, I'm still doing dip just because I want to balance out the
like
strength
straight
through the shoulder.
Straight bar dips?
Both.
Yeah.
Both bent and straight bar dips. But I think, yeah, all that sort of gymnastics training is adding up. Like, for example, today I was just doing some like weighted hanging, you know?
Yeah, that's all.
And I was doing some lever work, which is like, you know, it's not direct pull up training, but it's a bit of lat stuff, bit of core stuff, bit of grip stuff. It all kind of adds together. And you can't just do pull-ups non-stop, you'll get an injury. So that's one thing I've definitely been aware of. Anyway, guys, before we jump into the listener questions today, one of the partners of the show that we've absolutely loved, and actually one thing that made a huge difference recently, so as you guys know, a few weeks ago I started struggling with falling asleep, struggled with staying asleep, and one of the two things that I changed, one of them a little bit unrelated, I was probably overtraining a little bit, but the second thing that I changed, now in Australia in summer, the days obviously stretch out quite long, like most countries that have summer. You know, it's not really getting dark till like 8 o'clock, 8:30. And I thought, oh, well, I'm not going to put the blue light blockers on until it gets dark. That was a mistake. That was a mistake because just because the sun is still up a little bit is not an excuse not to put... You need those blue light blockers on like probably 2 or 3 hours before you're ready to go to bed. And that was really only giving me room for like an hour and a half. So what I did, I started putting the blue light blockers on as soon as I got home, which even though the sun was kind of still up and it's still kind of dusk, still light outside for a few hours, what it meant is that I was blocking all that blue light that, you know, affects sleep really early on. Because obviously, you know, if we're out in the wild, we're not going to have TVs and that sort of stuff. So your body's naturally sending. But if you're watching TV, even though the sun is up, unprotected, it's a very high amount of artificial light. Because I started blocking it, it's made all the difference to my sleep. And it really does. The timing at which you put these glasses on is important. So I think whatever that bedtime is, 9, 10, 11 o'clock, you know, calculate back 3 hours. So for me, I was having to put them on at like 7. And yeah, I've not had issues with sleeping. In fact, today on the Whoop, I PB'd my sleep efficiency. So I had average sleep efficiency of like 87%, which isn't that great. It's like a little bit of wasted time in there. And I got up to 94% today.
I think over 90 is where you want to be.
Yeah. So I'm really, really pumped with that today. It was really good. And efficiency is just like, hey, the time in bed versus how much time you sleep. So obviously, if you're spending a lot of time in bed, but you're not getting a lot of sleep, you're not very efficient. And you obviously want to close that gap as much as possible because you don't want...
What's your average? My average is 89%.
Yeah, so my average is probably like 86, yeah. 87%. But today I got 93, which is a massive PB for me. So I was pumped with that. So yeah, definitely get those blue light blockers on at nighttime early. And they make a huge difference. Definitely the quality of the lens. So if you guys head to themymuscleproject.com/blueblocks, you'll get a discount code for 15% off. They are our partners. And I highly recommend everyone has a pair. So that's our website /blueblocks, BLUBLOX. And you guys can pick yourself up the discount for any of those glasses. All right, Raf, first question.
All right, Jacob ZS. This might be my own bias, but I tend to see it more in females than males. Oh, wait. Hey, we're missing the first part of his question here. Okay, we're going to have to come back to that.
Okay.
There's obviously a first part to that, which doesn't make any sense. Okay, Jazz Fitness, could you give us more insight into your daily nutrition to support your training?
Yeah, I mean, we can, absolutely. Sometimes, though, we're not perfect, so it's not always going to be do what we do sort of thing. But if we're talking about an optimal day, I guess what would I be doing for 75 hard? That's probably a good question because I'm trying to optimize my food for that. Okay, I'll start. So, wake up in the morning. I pretty religiously have a green shake, so spinach, blueberries, ice, protein powders, activated nutrients, creatine, that sort of stuff. So I'll have all that. I usually have that after I've had a couple of glasses of water with some electrolytes in it, mostly Himalayan salt. I had some Trainaid for a while just because I was trying it out. So putting all that in, so hydrating. So it's really about probably a liter and a half of liquids, if not slightly more, first thing in the morning. That probably takes maybe 30 minutes to get through. And so after that, I'll then have a coffee, usually a black coffee or a small milk coffee. And that is, that's probably maybe like 30, 40 minutes after that. I did for a while mix it in with L-theanine because I was finding that only because I had liquids in my stomach and then I was having coffee, was getting way too much of a ramp up from the caffeine. So L-theanine helps to kind of offset that, make it a bit smoother. I don't do that as much anymore just because I got a little bit lazy with it, but maybe I'll put that in the 75 hard. And
bro,
it's good.
It's going to be 75 things, 75 every day, 75.
Well, just include the supplements, part of the diet.
Nice.
Then after that, I'll usually have something to kind of just hold me over until lunch, which is normally like a piece of toast or maybe like a piece of fruit or something. At lunch, we have we call it it's pre-made meals, I guess, like microwavable meals.
Yeah, meal delivery.
Yeah, meal delivery, whatever you call it. So I usually have two of them throughout the day. And then, at dinner, I normally just have fish, steak. Depends if Ev's making a curry or something like that. I just, some home-cooked meal. And that's pretty much it. I try not to... probably the only snack I really have is, like I mentioned, the muesli. So I just have some unhomogenized milk. I've actually noticed I can't go back to homogenized milk now. Like regular milk that you find on the shelf actually makes my stomach flip. So I can really only drink the good stuff. Now, unless I'm having a little bit in my coffee, but unhomogenized, like organic milk is sort of the only milk I can drink. Now, I'll just have like a small bowl of that with muesli and milk. That's usually if I've had a big training day just to help bring up my calories a little bit. That's pretty much it. It's pretty boring. Not that exciting.
Man, boring diets are the success, right? Mine is probably the similar, even more boring. Same hydration strategy in the morning. I have two meal delivery meals every single day. I have protein bar in between the meals every day. And then I have, like, always have dinner ready. And I have, like, I always have three proteins sitting in the fridge, vegetables sitting in the fridge, and different carbs sitting in the fridge. And I just, like, mix them, match them every night in the right quantity. And then I have yogurt, cereal, protein powder before I go to bed. Done. That is the whole day. That is a good day. That is really my diet. And then if we eat out, like, it fluctuates on that. But the biggest difference for me was that I used to just eat whenever I would get hungry, and sticking to more of a schedule with the meals makes the biggest difference. Yeah. When I first got a nutrition coach, that's the main thing that changed with me, the main thing that I stuck with. It wasn't like, because I knew the macros, right? So it wasn't like, oh, you got to eat carbs. I already knew that. And the total amount of calories, it was much more just like, don't go 7 hours without eating.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Or you just make bad choices at the end of that 7 hours.
No,
right?
I had some bad choices.
Yeah. All of a sudden, the deep fried Chinese food looks like a really good choice.
Maybe that has got more protein.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we'll get into the second listener question.
We are going back to that first question. It was about butt wing. So Jacob ZS asks, about the butt wink. This might be my own bias, but I tend to see it more in females than males. Is there a reason why? Is it due to bone structure or build or something different?
So more in females than males. Yeah, I mean, obviously you are just collecting. Humans have really bad memories, very selective memories. It's called confirmation bias. It's a few things. Confirmation bias, recency bias, multiple different things. But your memory is not a reliable source as to like what is the general rule here. It's not men or women. There's nothing going on there. It's just people that are tight. If you're tight and you don't have good control over your pelvis and your spine position, you will have a butt wink. It's not because you're a guy or because you're a girl. It's because you haven't trained it properly and you don't have the mobility needed to squat.
Yeah, but I mean, also it can happen in clients that aren't very tight as well, like really loose kind of yoga clients control. As well can have it because they'd have no control. And because they have no control, they're going really deep in their squat. And if you go deep enough, you're always going to butt wink, right? If you got like crazy bastard grass with no control, you're going to wink. So I don't think it's like the super different build.
No, it's not.
I mean, you guys do it a lot as well.
Yeah.
Next question. The Jared Reed, he wants to turn back our final listener question on us. Sorry, our final interview question on us. Is it something that you two believe for a long time but recently changed your mind on?
Something recent. Honestly, I didn't think COVID would be over in Australia as fast as it ended up. I actually thought we'd be in it longer. I thought we'd be where the US and the UK is now. Like, that's where in my mind, I'm like, okay, this like global pandemic, it's like shit's hit the fan, spreading like crazy. Coming out of the first lockdown, it's pretty grim. I was like, oh, we could probably be in this for a few years. Like, I was pretty, everyone was like, no, we'll be traveling by this time. Everyone was quite optimistic. But in my head, I was optimistic in terms of like, hey, I actually don't think life will be that bad. I think, you know, enjoying life will be fine. But I do think we'll be in it for a very long time. And how quickly things have gone back to normal, it's actually kind of shocked me a little bit. So I believe that the lockdowns and the pandemic would probably be a lot worse or would have lasted a lot longer than it actually did. But, I mean, circumstances changed my mind, obviously.
Man, that's a good one. Man, I'm trying to think one for me. I would say one, which is what I started the show about. I was always a big believer in, like, say, for example, when I did the half marathon run, I didn't touch any water. I'm always like, nah, you, like, don't need a drink. And the reason I came to that conclusion was, because they had those studies on like marathon runners, like marathon, like, you know, that guy set the 2-hour marathon, like he didn't drink during it, right? There's no time. So you can obviously hit crazy levels of performance without drinking. So I was always like, oh, I think it's just like more of a convenience, a nice thing. But I changed my mind on that. Obviously, if you start going longer, there is a huge difference to your body when you're just well hydrated. It's not just like toughing it out.
Especially the rate that you fucking sweat, bro.
Yeah, that's very true.
Makes depends a huge difference, yeah.
Okay. This is probably a short one. Train hard. He's asking with something we've had a lot of experience in. How do you find the right CrossFit training program? Are there any you recommend? Man, hasn't been for a while, but we have done a lot of CrossFit training programs. Personally, for me, there's like none that I can now go and recommend. I would say that I think generally just like going and jumping on a program is probably not the right option for most people. I think a group program for CrossFit is worthwhile if there's like a bunch of people doing it, like you're going to a gym and they're all doing the gym's group programming, because you just get so much out of training in an environment, and like whatever you miss out on with the individualization is sort of made up from the fact that you're in an awesome gym with awesome people and you're not like by yourself at home doing dumbbell external rotations. But if you are just going to go do a program on your own, then I reckon it's probably worth investing in an individual program, because the price difference is not that crazy. And if you're going to be training on your own and choosing a program, you may as well do a program that's right for you. If I go choose a random program, it's like, I don't know if it's the right thing for you.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you prescribe a group template or a group program for an individual, it needs to be the right person for that program. So because I don't know what you're like, I can't recommend the right program, which is why when we talk about our project programs, we say, you know, it's for this type of person, and we describe a little bit of what the program's like, and then the person listening to it, it's like, oh, that seems like a good program for me, ends up being a good person for that program. Because it's kind of like, we're doing this the other way around, I don't really know what you're like, and I don't really know what your level is, so I can't say, oh, well, this is good because it's like for people that are high volume and athletes and all that sort of stuff. If you're just beginning, you know, training plan's stupid, but if you're like a super advanced athlete, potentially training plan could be a good program.
Well, so, like, what? Yeah, one thing we'd probably take a stab at is that you're probably on the beginner end.
If you're wondering,
you're asking this question, you're probably not rich Roning. asking this question, so you're probably looking for a beginner program. It's going to be much more suitable to you.
Yeah, I mean, the best program to I guess, go on in many ways is also the one that's coached the best and has the best coaches, because you can have a really great program, but if it's coached poorly or it's done poorly, then it's not a great program anymore. So the two kind of go hand in hand. If you're kind of training by yourself on your own, like Raph said, it's probably better to get a coach and someone that's going to write an individual program for you and hold you accountable and look at your movement, and that's where you're going to get most of your benefits.
Meg Haltera, have you got any thoughts on the Whoop bicep strap? I hear loads of people say the bicep strap is more accurate, but she doesn't know how they know that and that it's worth switching over. Do you have any experience with it or with your clients?
I don't.
I've never tried the bicep strap. I've seen clients wear the strap on their bicep, and it seems to work fine. But I'm not the actual dedicated strap. I've actually never seen someone using it.
Well, I wore it on my ankle for a bit during summer just because I was getting so dark in the sun that it was becoming ridiculous how white and pasty the skin was underneath my Whoop. So I switched it over to my ankle for a bit, and it was still just as accurate. It wasn't as accurate in training, but in like sleeping and day-to-day stuff, it was still very accurate. I think because of the accelerometer, obviously on your arms, like if you're doing a dumbbell snatch, right, it's moving around heaps, but you know, on your ankle, it's not moving at all. So I think for training, it wasn't quite as good up on the, down on the ankle. So it's better up on the wrist, but I think it's pretty good technology. I think kind of wherever you put it on, it kind of falls into that accuracy range. But generally, I think the wrist is supposed to be the most accurate spot. I mean, it's where it takes, it's where the majority of people are wearing it. And so I think the data points are more comparable.
Sorry, I'm actually wrong. I have seen the bicep band. It looks exactly the same as the wrist one. It's just longer.
Oh, you haven't seen it before?
No, I thought I had it, but Ewan at the gym wears the bicep band.
Yeah, it's different. It's not the wristband. It's longer.
Yeah, it's longer, but it looks very similar.
It looks exactly the same.
Yeah, it looks exactly. I just thought that was his wristband.
Oh, okay.
And like,
no, it's not enough material.
His arms are so small. He's probably listening. His arms are just so small. He could fit. He could fit his wrist. No, his arms are massive. His wristband around his bicep. Turns out, no, his arms are big. He has a bicep band. It works well for him. He has excellent data, so I think it's fine.
Yeah, no, I think it's fine.
Okay.
Is that it?
One more question.
How to get big biceps for the bicep band? My wristband fits on my bicep.
No, legit. This person's asking another Whoop question. A different person, though. Mitchell Tasker. His Whoop band is giving him a way higher calorie burn than his Garmin FNS6. Why is the activity burn so much lower on the Whoop compared to the Garmin?
Oh, it's lower on the Whoop.
Lower on the Whoop.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. A lot of people have said that.
I think it's just honestly because it's more accurate. It's taking in way more data points to it.
Yeah, I think the Whoop's more accurate as well. I mean, most of the calorie burning technology things are like overestimating how many calories you get, because it just makes it a better piece of technology in your eyes, in your perception. You're like, oh, wow, I burnt 2,500 calories today, you know, and really only burnt 1,800.
Yeah, I find that other companies that do this, they always seem to overestimate, particularly exercise. They're like, oh, that was like a 1,200 calorie workout. I'm like, no way.
No way. Most people are like, you know, most people can get pretty fat on like 2,500, 3,000 calories. You know what I mean? Which means...
That's the road to diabetes for 99% of people.
Yeah, which I mean, means most people are barely burning, you know, 2,000 calories a day, you know, sitting down stuff. If you sit down all day and don't really do anything, you don't burn that many
calories. That's why, you know, for most of our clients, to get them to lose weight, they're eating like 2,000 calories.
Yeah.
You know, if those Garmins were right, I'd put them on 2,500 calories and they'd shred weight.
Yeah.
They don't.
They gain weight. Yeah. So, I think just Whoop is more accurate, to be honest. I think a lot of those are just older technologies. They just haven't invested in the same R&D because they've just had so much success in so many other different arenas and wholesale agreements and loads of different reasons. But yeah, I think the Whoop's definitely ahead of its time right now. Was that it?
Yeah, that's question? It.
All right, cool. Before we dive into the movie review or the series review for this week, one of our partners, actually, I was on a call, a digital conversation with a group of business owners, and I always recommend four supplements. And one of the staple supplements is Activate Nutrients. I say it's a whole food greens powder that contains all your probiotics and all the vitamins and minerals that you need to basically get through a day and be functioning well and functioning healthy and have cells that are working, nutrients that are being absorbed from food, all that sort of stuff. And it's just really simple, right? It's one serving a day. It's less than $2. It covers all your bases in the morning. It's like, so you don't have to remember. I mean, you should still eat all your vegetables and your fruits and all that stuff that, you know, you need and they will provide you with different things that a powder won't, but it's still good to put the insurance in there with the powder. So it comes with us everywhere. I know Raf has it every morning. I have it every morning. That's the top-up product from Activated Nutrients. You guys can find it at themymuscleproject.com/activated. There is a discount code on there for all the products on their website. So make sure you check it out. Activated Nutrients. Oh, sorry, themymuscleproject.com/activated to find that discount. It's on there. Okay, this one's really, I'm pumped for this one, right? So there's this show. I'd heard about it. I hadn't had something to watch it on, except obviously I downloaded Binge for the Tiger Woods documentary. And now I'm finding all these new shows alone. It's a survival show. So I watched the sixth season. I don't know why the first five seasons went there, but basically they put 10 contestants out in the Arctic. So the North Pole, I think. No, not Antarctica, the Arctic, the North. Yeah. It's
got the North Pole.
No, is the North Pole like all ice and shit?
I've never been.
Nah. I can't remember the I think it's the Arctic.
Okay.
Yeah, the North Arctic. It's like it has a summer, right? With like bears and shit on there. And I think like that's it. Yeah, it's not the North Pole.
Yeah.
It's not polar bears. Okay, so but it's fuck cold, right? It's super cold. And so I put 10 people out there alone in different regions. And they don't go very far. You can't really travel that far anyway because you'll die. You don't have enough food. So 10 people in all different regions scattered throughout. They're all survival experts. So like they all know how to survive. They all know, they're all like really well trained. They can like, they're all hunters and that sort of stuff. They get 10 items that they can take with them. Obviously from like a range of categories, you can't like take a house or something. So they take like, you know, they take a bow, they take like an axe, take like a tarp. It's like a flint to like start fires. So all these different things. And then essentially they just have to, they have a 65 pound suitcase full of camera gear that they take around with them and like obviously film themselves. So they're like out, there's no camera crew. Like they are filming themselves. So they're obviously being trained before the show. It's like, hey, you always need to set up a shot here. So they've got tripods and stuff. So they're constantly filming. They're like, hey, when you go to sleep at night, you need to set up these three cameras because they always get the certain shots. So obviously the quality of the shooting depends on the quality of the show, right? They didn't teach these people when to film. These people would like never film, right? So they're obviously telling them constantly to check in and film and that sort of stuff. Anyway, so they just have to outlast each other. But they have no idea how the progress is going, right? So you're just out there for weeks at a time and you have no idea, am I like, is it just between me and one other person? Is everyone still around? So you don't sort of know. And they put them right on the edge of winter. So it's like warm enough for a while so that they kind of, you know, it's cold, obviously, but it's not horrendous, not snowing and
icy. So is it getting warmer or getting colder?
It's getting colder.
Okay.
Going into winter.
That's good, right?
So they have like 2 weeks of no snow and then it like starts snow, then it's like freezing, then the ice like freezes over the water and stuff. But anyways, insane show. Gets fucking repetitive. So repetitive. So we started skipping through heaps of the episodes because they just wake up and say, oh, cool. Like another day I'm going to go check my traps and see if I've caught anything. And oh my God, I caught something. Anyway. What's really interesting for me is like towards the end of the show, right? As like people's bodies are like really breaking down because they're like in full starvation mode. And the med teams like start, so you can get, so medical teams start coming in and they like do regular checks on you and they start pulling contestants out, right? And what's crazy is like in the first half of the show, basically the first people before they hit like the really, really cold part of the show, the first five people that go out, they're just soft, like, they're like, they're smart and they're tough. And like, obviously they would outlast me, but they're not as mentally tough as the other contestants. Like they start crying and stuff and they're like, oh, I can't do it. So they call the walkie talkie. They're like, yeah, I'm out. They give up after like 2 or 3 weeks. One guy gave up because he just missed his wife. He's like, he had food. He was like ex-army ranger. He was like nailing it. Dude, he had a mad shelter, everything. And he's like, oh, I just miss my kids too much. And he just called in. So then he was mentally weak because everyone had like families and stuff, right? But then what's interesting is when you get down to the last people and they're like, 8 weeks into this, right? And it's like the whole lake's frozen over. They're like, to get water, they're like hitting it with an axe.
How much money's on the line?
$500,000.
Okay.
And for all of them, they're all broke.
Yeah.
Like if there's one theme about all the people on that show is they are all broke.
Their one is $500,000.
They all have no money. Like the money is big to them.
Yeah.
Obviously for some people, $500,000, it's like chump change, right? But to them, people are like, yeah, I've basically lived in the forest because I can't afford a home. I can't afford rent. People are like, oh yeah, cool. I've practiced starving because I can't afford.
It's life-changing money.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And anyway, but what's interesting is when it gets down to the last few people, they're like really mentally tough. Mm. Like these people are like, no, I'll die out here. Like I will actually die out here. And that's what happens is they would die if the medical team didn't step in. They're at the point where the medical team is like, no, we're pulling you out. And they're like, no, I'm fucking staying. They're like, no, you have to leave. You're going to die. You're going to have heart failure. Because what it gets down to, I didn't even know this, right? It's probably what started happening in like, obviously the concentration camps and stuff in Europe. Dude, they have lost all their body fat. Their body has burned through all their body fat. Now it's like breaking down muscle, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, so what? I'll just break down all my muscle. Like, no. It's like eating
organs,
your heart and stuff. Your body's breaking down heart tissue to survive. And so they're like, nah, we got to pull you out. This one girl lost 40% of her body weight. 40%.
How was she fat going in?
Yeah, like they fatten up to go into it. Like they all talk about, I've like eaten heaps and I've gone fat going into it. But it's 40% of her body weight. It's crazy. She got down because this one night she
got a more effective Biggest Loser show.
Oh, way more effective. She got like an injury, right? She had like a cut. So she's taking off all her clothes and she's going over the fire. And she's putting like these herbs in the fire that's supposed to like help with bacteria or whatever. And so it's the first time in the whole show she's taken off all her clothes to like check her body. And she's like anorexic. That's crazy. You see all her ribs. Like her stomach's all, it looks like, you know when you do a stomach vacuum and you like hold your stomach in? That was her stomach.
That's because they can't catch enough food.
Yeah, they just can't keep up with the demand. But what happens in the show? You can't pack snacks. Nah. It's not enough snacks, but I'll tell you, they're out there for a long time. Yeah. And like, but what ends up happening is a lot of the food that they catch, it's like really lean animals, like game meat and like rabbits and squirrels and birds and stuff. Like there's no fat on those animals. And what I didn't realize is like, you actually need fatty animals to survive out there because you get a lot of like organ
issues. It's even like it's why like breast chicken is so unappetizing because like your body craves fat with it. I think you can even get poisoning if you like only catch like super super lean, so you have like zero fat in your diet and you're just getting protein. It's like not healthy for you.
But I'm telling you, the guy that won season 6 some of the stuff he built is absurd. It's honestly absurd. He could start his own shop out there in the forest. Like he was building stuff. You're like, surely that's not possible. But he's just like this crazy dude that's had this wild life. And he's like, been in Russia and Siberia and all these weird places where he's like gathered all these skills. But the man, and like you put that man out there with an axe and a knife and wood, and he was building some stuff that was crazy. He could like sell, he put his house on realestate.com. It was so good. I couldn't believe it. It's like it had a room and a bed and stuff. Like, anyway, it's crazy. But I reckon it's such a cool show because, one, it definitely makes you appreciate how easy and how much food and abundance we got. Two, I think what's really interesting is it makes you that, because obviously they get really lonely out there and they start talking heaps about the comparison between the modern world and like all your desires and the schedule and what distracts you and how busy you are and like a really simplified living. They're like, yeah, you know, out here, it's like really what life is about. It's like really the simple stuff. But I think what is, you know, really interesting is a lot of those people in many ways, they don't want to go back to the modern society. Is they do like it. Obviously, it's in the hardest, harshest conditions anyway, but they want some form of that. They're like, cool, I'm going to go spend the money so now I can live out in the forest indefinitely. Like, obviously, they'll build a house. It won't be freezing cold all the time. It might be in some California, like woods near Yosemite or something. Something a bit nicer, but it just is interesting, those type of people. There's obviously a lot more people in America that are like really for that nature life that is obviously so different to us, but they don't really want anything to do with the modern world. And they're almost like, I love doing this. I've accumulated all these skills. I just need a bit of that money so I can keep doing this indefinitely without dying. I just thought it was really interesting. Yeah. Like there's no city slickers in that show.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, the city slickers will not last in that show. No one from New York is doing that alone series because it is absolutely grueling.
So they basically catch food, catch water, everything.
That's it. Yeah, they just like they start building a shelter, they start catching food, setting up traps, and then they're just like, yeah, trying to. What's really interesting is like, okay, can I do this activity? No, it burns too many calories. I'm not going to do it.
They're not training.
No way. Training. No mobility, nothing. Like they are conserving energy. But then they get caught in this predicament where it's like, okay, I have a little bit of food. But they're obviously trying to stay out there as long as possible. So, like, I could do nothing today and make my food last really long, but it's really boring. It's nothing to do. There's no stimulation. So, it's like, I want to go do the things now that distract me. Like, maybe I'll go do some fishing or I'll go for a walk and I'll, like, set up some new traps or I'll scout the area or whatever. but it burns more calories. Mm. So it's like these
then get, I'll be hungry again.
Yeah. So it's a cool show. But yeah, I'll tell you what, 5 episodes in, it gets really repetitive. So I started skipping through to get to the good stuff. But yeah, just some of the hunting, some of the game that they take down, it's pretty cool. And it is kind of funny watching how mad these people go as well. It's a good show. Definitely won't watch more than one season, that's for sure. But half a season watched, half a season skipped, and then an end result, I give it 4 out of 5.
Well, I did look on Wikipedia, and it's like seasons 3, 4, and 5 are very similar to 1 and 2.
They're so similar. And it's the same shit, right? People just surviving, eating, pretty simple. But yeah, it's a great show. I'd definitely check it out. That was on Binge, so I don't know where you guys would get it overseas in America, but in Australia, Binge is the streaming channel that you can get it on. All right, that's it. Guys, this is the end of the month. The new program that we have off for 30% for this month is our fitness program. So if you are looking to increase or add conditioning in or prioritize getting fit, building up your fitness, building up your conditioning, your cardio, mymuscleproject.com/fitness. Okay, so for the month of March, fitness, the project fitness program is 30% off. Use the code FITNESS30, that's FITNESS30, one word, and you will save 30% off that program when you head to it. Our website /fitness. Okay, guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to the mymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.